Fortunately, they were making at least a little progress. And while Caleb wasn't positive, he suspected Owl was getting progressively better at sorting and prioritizing information. Whatever Owl was doing, though, the ability to assign specific portions of what Merlin called the intel take to someone besides just Merlin had helped enormously. There were limitations, of course. No one else had Merlin's built-in comm equipment. They had to speak out loud instead of sub-vocalizing if they wanted to communicate with Owl or anyone else, which severely limited where and when they could interact with the AI. And all of them were also creatures of flesh and blood, prey to all the weaknesses of the flesh, including the need for food and at least a reasonable amount of sleep. For that matter, even Merlin had discovered the hard way that he did need at least the equivalent of rest if he was going to maintain his mental focus. More to the point, Caleb had figured that out as well, and ordered him to take the downtime he needed to stay fresh and alert. Which, in fact, was precisely what he was doing at this very moment, or he'd damned well better be at any rate. Because if Caleb or Charlian caught him listening in when he was supposed to be sleeping, and Al had been ordered to report him if it happened, there'd be hell to pay.
"Well, in this case, Your Majesty, I think your impression is accurate," Stainer told her. "As a matter of fact, I suppose I might as well go ahead and admit I was hugely relieved by my own observations here."
"Here" wasn't actually quite the correct word anymore, Charlian reflected. Dawn Wind had sailed from Erastor Bay on the afternoon tide. At the moment, she was making her way, slowly, especially for someone who had experienced Merlin's recon skimmer, out into the western half of Dolphin Reach, and she was no wyvern, able to ignore reefs, shoals, islands, currents, and unfavorable winds. If they were lucky, and if Dawn Wind managed, oh, unlikely event, to avoid any major storms and made a relatively quick passage for this time of year, she would cover the 7,300 sea miles to Chiraeth in only about 10 5-days. Charlian hated, absolutely hated, having Stainer stuck aboard a ship for that long. Yet she'd been forced to agree with him that it wasn't really as if they had a lot of choice. It was essential for the ordained head of the Church of Karras to visit all of the new Empire's lands. And unlike the Church of God Awaiting, the Church of Karras had decreed from the outset that its bishops and archbishops would be permanent residents of their sees. Instead of making brief annual visits to the souls committed to their care, they would make one, and only one, visit to the Church of Karras's annual convocation each year. The rest of their time would be spent at home, seeing to their own and their flock's spiritual needs, maintaining their focus on what truly mattered. And the Church's annual convocation would be held in a different city every year, not allowed to settle permanently into a single location, which would, inevitably, become an imperial city, the Carisian equivalent of the City of Zion in its own right. That meant the Archbishop of Karras would be traveling most years just as surely as any of his subordinate prelates. It would have been unthinkable for any Grand Vicar to make the same sort of journey and subject himself to all the wearying effort involved in it. Or, for that matter, the inescapable perils of wind and weather inherent in such lengthy voyages. But that was fine with Michael Stainer. The greater and more numerous the differences between the Church of Karras and the Church of God Awaiting, the better, for a lot of reasons, as far as he was concerned, and he was determined to establish the pattern firmly. Firmly enough that no empire-building successor of his would find the tradition easy to subvert. His current tour was part of building that tradition. Yet it was more than that, too, for he was determined to personally visit every capital of every political unit of the Carisian Empire, and as many more of the major cities as he could manage as well. As Wind Thunder had so grumpily pointed out before his departure for Emerald, it was a security nightmare in many respects. God only knew how many Temple Loyalists would simply have loved to stick something sharp and pointy between the ribs of arch-heretic Stainer, as the Loyalist broadsides had dubbed him. But the number had to be enormous. The attempt had already been made once, right in his own cathedral. Who knew what kind of opportunities might arise or might be manufactured in someone else's cathedral? On the other hand, he was right. He had to establish that kind of personal contact with as much as possible of the new church's clergy if he expected that clergy to accept that he truly cared about its worries, its concerns, its agonizing crises of conscience as it coped with the spiritual demands of schism. And he does care, Charlian thought. He truly does. He understands what he's asking of them. I don't believe anyone not completely blinded by intolerance and hatred could fail to recognize that after 5 minutes in his presence, and that's the exact reason he has to be doing this. However much what I really want to do is lock him up safe and sound inside Telesburg Cathedral and the Archbishop's Palace. So you're satisfied about Emerald, at least, where the church is concerned, I mean, Caleb said, and Stainer nodded. I don't think Prince Narman's Emeraldians have quite as much fire in their bellies, let's say, as we have back home in Telesburg, he said. On the other hand, they weren't the people the group before intended to have raped and murdered either. At the same time, though, I was deeply gratified by how clearly people in Emerald already recognized the fundamental corruption that let the group before come to power in the first place. It's become increasingly evident to me that many, indeed I'm tempted to say most, if that's not a case of letting my own optimism run away with me, of Emerald's churchmen saw the temple's corruption long before Narman ever decided to swear fealty to the two of you, at any rate. And believe me, those who did recognize it know they could have been Clinton's next target, even if they weren't the first time around. In fact, I'm coming to the conclusion that we may discover a larger reformist movement and commitment than we'd initially anticipated in most places.